sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
All eyes are on the Fed. Budget proposal is passed. And stocks are down for the second week. That and so much more on episode number 343 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello to everybody out there. It is snowing, sleeting, hailing, and doing all sorts of nasty stuff up in the Northeast. You know, my daughter got on a plane from New York early on Sunday morning. And just made it out. After her plane took off, it seems that they closed down a lot of airports, and there's so many delays around the country. So if you are one of those that are either in the camp of being delayed going somewhere, or even just having to shovel out or scrape your windshield with that little plastic scraper thing that you have to use in the wintertime, I remember those things. It was always kind of weird. There was two ways to do it. There's one on the end of the brush. Those of you who know about snow, you know what I'm talking about, that snow brush thing. And the other side was an ice scraper. And then you had a little scraper that was just designed to kind of try to do your best to scrape off any ice that was on the windshield that you would hopefully be able to remove after you started the car and started to get the windows warmed up. And what a horrible experience. And then they came out with those cars that can start automatically, you know, click the button and it starts from a distance. That was probably the greatest invention, because getting up in the early morning to go to work in the snow was just horrible when you couldn't do anything but first shovel out, then get into your car and try to get all the snow off of it. I'll tell you something, quick story. There was a time back in, I don't know what it was, let's say it was probably 1987, 6, 5. It was snowing out really badly and it was very bad weather up in New York, and I was on my way to work that day, and I was on the parkway, and you know, the traffic is awful as it is, and with the snow, it's even worse. Well, I don't know what happened, but my car stopped. Now, these are the days before cell phones. And what could I do? There's nowhere to go. Pull off the side of the road just with the last little bit of spark the car had, and I began my walk to the nearest exit. And I walked and I walked and I walked, and I called up the closest. My dad was probably about 15 minutes away on the drive. I said, "Dad, do me a favor. Come and pick me up." I said, "Where are you?" I'll explain later. So I'm there shivering cold, soaking wet from the snowfall, but yet at the time I had a mustache. My mustache was full of icicles. It's so cold out, okay? I get in the car, turn the heat on full blast. My father says, "What are you doing? It's hot." I said, "Please, just for a few minutes." This is the days before we had the amazing gadgetry that we have today. I mean, can you imagine a time before there was cell phones? And what would you do when you were in a situation where you had to go and get some help? There was really no alternative. So it's made our lives really easy in terms of some ways, in terms of communication and keeping in touch with things. And it's made a lot harder, hasn't it? Because we're always available. Anyway, let's talk about some things that are also in today's world that maybe haven't been there in the past. Like, for example, we know the Fed is always there. It's kind of like the always-on internet. The Fed seems to be always there, and the focus of investors is going to be on the meeting this week. It's a couple different meetings with the FOMC and the release of the rates and their decision, rate decision. And there is a much higher probability, according to most polls, that the Fed will actually start tapering at this meeting. And I think I mentioned last week that I'd be pretty hard-pressed after all they've done to continue on with their bond-buying program to really see a significant move. It may be just a token gesture, but with all of the problems that we have from the consumer side with the shortened holiday season, with a little bit less spending. And now with these storms that are coming in right in the heart of the shopping season, I would say that they won't want to push too hard in this area, and maybe they'll wait. But at the same time, are they going to just rest it in the lap of Janet Yellen when she comes in as the Fed chair? I don't know. But there's, again, 50-50. It's pretty much an even shot right now into what they're going to be doing. But the markets are, in fact, reacting as though there is going to be some kind of tapering, some kind of a drawback very, very soon. We're seeing the bond market again selling off, and rates are moving higher. And we are also seeing the recent move and change in the sentiment when it comes to markets. You know, we had several weeks, maybe even months, that any kind of dip was bought. And recently that turned around a bit. As a matter of fact, we saw that ETF flows and fund flows for mutual funds into equity funds over the last couple of weeks have turned negative. Now, whether or not that's just simply a end of year profit taking, cleaning up the portfolio, rotation, whatever it may be, we have been seeing that. And we are seeing a very interesting move of some stocks, like the ones that have been playing out well. You got the Twitter, the Facebook, you got Tesla, Priceline, you know, the names. They're all of a sudden catching a lot of buying interest. Now, possibly what that is nothing more than end-of-year window dressing, which I find the whole process of window dressing to be somewhat ridiculous. Because the theory was that mutual fund managers and hedge fund managers at the end of a quarter, but definitely at the end of a year, would have to publish what their holdings were at any given time. And they want to show that they had this particular holding in their portfolio to make sure that their customers are happy. But it's kind of a little bit silly. What's the difference? If they didn't have it all the time, and the performance of their portfolio shows that, and because it's a good performing security they want to have, what's the difference? It is the process that goes on. It is what we do see on a regular basis. But again, it's kind of, at this point, I think a little ridiculous. Well, we're setting up for 2014. And what do we do different? Well, we know that we're going to have window dressing. We know that there is something brewing with the Fed. We do know that we are seeing a mix of economic numbers that are coming out. And we know that earnings season will be starting in January. Once again, seems like it just ended. We saw Adobe's numbers come out, by the way, on Thursday after the close. And they had what I would call, just from the very basics of looking at the report, a pretty, I would say, negative outlook and a questionable report overall. Their earnings were down and their outlook was much lower than anticipated. But they did have a much higher number of new subscriptions, because Adobe has gone from a packaged product where you get a DVD or you download it and you buy it and you own it until you upgrade it to the next time, to a cloud-based model like a Salesforce or other places that basically you do a rent, a release of the product for a period of time. So they charge you monthly. It's much easier for you to buy and get into, because in the old days before this, it was $500, $1,000, $2,000 for the entire suite, depending on what you're buying of their products, whether it's Photoshop or Dreamweaver and Adobe Premiere Pro and all the different audio, visual, and photography-based and programming with Flash that they have. So now you buy it on a monthly basis. And what investors are looking for at this point is the recurring revenue stream. But I found it really interesting that even though we know we're looking for the recurring revenue stream of Adobe, and even though the outlook was really much more, I would say, dim, it was reduced from where they thought they would be, the stock initially sold off about 6 or 7%. After the numbers came out, and the next day it just went crazy on the upside, up about 12%, pretty substantial reversal. There was no more news really out, except for the fact that they had a much higher level of subscription-based. So here's the thinking, that when we have a new form of revenue in terms of how it's being paid, and you have new subscribers, what they're doing is they're taking that and they're basically calculating what the revenue stream is going to be over time, considering a continuation of the trend of growth of subscriptions. So therefore, you know, basically they like the numbers. Now we're seeing that on the higher end side of retail, there has been some downgrades coming out. Lululemon was downgraded, and we saw that there's some concern in some of the other sectors as well. We'll wait till the end of the quarter to see what happens with those. But let's just get back to what we are looking at right now. Basically, into the end of the year, we have the budget. We have the coming into the beginning of the year, we have the debt ceiling to deal with. We're hearing already all sorts of discussion that, don't worry about it. We're okay. There's no problem. So we have to believe the politicians, right? We'll hold that thought for a second. Then we have that the budget has been presented and about $63 billion of cuts that were going to take place over a period of a couple of years are actually being put back into. In other words, they're reversing that. And supposedly there's going to be about a $25 billion savings in the overall budget that they prepared. So I'm not sure how they do their math when you're spending $63 billion, $65 billion more, but you're actually somehow coming out with a better number for your budget. Well, it's Washington math. In fact, when we look at some of the things that have been said recently, one of the things that really stuck out was that on, I believe it was Thursday, that the Iran talks are breaking down. Now, wait a minute. Do you remember us talking about how it was astounding that we would actually go and provide billions of dollars in aid to Iran without them actually taking any significant steps other than saying, hey, yeah, that's good. We'll go with it. This was something that I was just astounded by. I said, why are we giving them money if they actually didn't do anything? Is it just some kind of a gesture? But why do we make the move first on this? Again, and whether or not we're in favor or not in favor of sanctions against Iran, my point here is that just recently we did this, and supposedly this whole deal was done, and now we're hearing that talks are breaking down after the fact we gave the money. Now, this is the kind of thing that you have to realize that goes on these days, that you see one side of the news, and in fact, the other side is somehow, well, it's suppressed. And that leads me into what we want to do for 2014, maybe differently, and some things that I'm going to share with you that I've been thinking about. Because over the last year or so, I have found that the headlines in the news when it comes to investing have been getting worse and worse and more skewed towards just pulling you in to read the story rather than providing you a quick snippet of what is actually going on. So one of the ideas I'm thinking about, and whether or not you want to use these as potential resolutions in your investment world or just something that may be considered, is that you read more of the headlines than the headlines. You read more than just the quick first paragraph and find out what they're saying, because a lot of times the information that you find inside of a news item is a lot more, has a lot more detail that really does give you what you need to know rather than just a headline, which may be just a small area that is, in fact, contradicted throughout the article. So read more than the headlines, and at the same time realize that the news and the media are biased. There is nothing anymore that I can find, maybe a C-SPAN, if you just watch that because there's nobody commentating. There is no way to find news that doesn't have some kind of a bias. Rather than having just a news source where you can find information and then make your own judgment, the news has gone to the length of trying to be the interpreter, but in a way that they also bring their own bias. Now, you can go over the last several decades and you can sit back and think about how the news has actually changed. These days, we can label a particular station as right-wing, left-wing, conservative, liberal, that they're pro-this or anti-that. And you could do the same with not only television, but you could do that with print media as well. realize that when you're reading something, there may be a slant. There may be some kind of a bias. And you have to understand that if there is that bias that's going on, well, you have to take that into consideration. And that is very true when it comes to investment information. Just think about all the times that you hear about the various rumors that are going on, or you see that there's a news story that is continually pumping one side of the discussion, and it may be for a lot of different reasons that we are not aware of and will never be aware of. Okay, so the news. I was also thinking of the concept of, hey, maybe we'll start the new year off with purging old ideas. Think about, okay, we know that when it comes to investing, there's certain things that, quote unquote, supposedly are supposed to be correlated and happen. But think about purging old ideas in that if you were not didn't do well with a particular security, or if you have something that you haven't done before because you have some idea about it, but you're maybe not fully educated, maybe, for example, options. You have some kind of a bias against options because of risk maybe, or something you did once before, or maybe your lack of knowledge. Well, you know what? Clean the slate. Clean the slate entirely. And think about, hey, I'm just looking to make money on this, and what is it that I can do to reach that goal? In 2014 also, I think, we want to start looking back at some fundamentals. You've noticed probably that there's been an incredible ramp of many different stocks with very poor fundamentals. That won't last forever. Fundamentals, in other words, the earnings growth, the cash on the books, the recurring and growth of revenue, the management, all the things that at the end of the day are important when you're looking at a company are going to come into focus. We talked about how the markets are somewhat overvalued in many areas, but yet there was that continual push and continually getting into more and more overvalued territory from a fundamental basis. Now, technicals are a little bit different. But I want you to think about a refocus on fundamentals as one of the core principles that you use when you're looking at any investment. Now, also, I want you to think about, for 2014, taking risk. Now, when I say taking risk, I don't mean taking risk like, you know, put all your money into Bitcoin or do something crazy with one particular security or just bet it all on one futures in one direction. I'm talking about taking risk and allowing yourself to take the risk and give yourself the opportunity to make money. But at the same time, there is a caveat here. Work on limiting your losses, knowing where the stops should be, or at least they are not, maybe not should be, but where the best position is to put those stops. And at the same time, when it's time to get out, when it's time to say, hey, you know what? This stock has run its course because X, Y, Z, maybe the fundamentals are lined up and you see that it is a full valuation. You're seeing the technicals are starting to change direction, sentiment of the market's changing, whatever it is. But be available to take on the risk, because if you don't take on the risk, whether it's long or short, you're never going to have the opportunity to make money. Now, that goes along with my next point, which is to follow the crowd in early. You know how sometimes you find maybe a stock that's moving and everybody's talking about it, and you're thinking, you know, this is really just a fad, whatever that is. But it keeps moving. Oh, if I get in now, it's too late. Whether it's again, depending on what side, the short or the long. But if the crowd is moving into it, maybe it's a really good thing to do, because the crowds do push things in any direction. So it's all about following the crowd in early and exiting early, exiting before the crowd gets out. Now, you may not get the full valuation and the full move of whatever it is that you're investing in. But again, just one of the points to think about, and maybe to put up as a little in a notepad, as, you know, some things that I am going to do in my investing world. And this is one of them: taking risk, limiting losses, getting back in, even if you lost on a position. So if you have a stock that you bought and it didn't work out, that doesn't mean it's dead forever. It could be just a timing issue. I can tell you several stocks that it is just a timing issue. And if you're not inclined and ready and open to moving back in, you're never going to get that opportunity. So many stocks move later or earlier. So you have to be ready at all times. And that brings me to making sure that you keep a watch list. So for 2014, I want you to think about making sure that you have a very good watch list that is updated and it is groomed on a regular basis so that you know when a stock that you are watching moves to the point that you're going to initiate a entry or an exit. And you could do that several different ways. There's many programs out there that will give you an alert if a stock hits a certain price. But you do your homework, you set up where you're going to be buying in or selling out, and you put that in there. And of those stocks that are on your list that you like, but maybe they're not quite at the level that they are, that you want them to be in order to buy in, well, note it, alert it, keep that watch list. And if it stays there for a long time, it just, the price doesn't move, let's say, just stays flat, update it. Is it something you want to continue to have on your watch list? If it moves into the price range and you don't execute, well, okay, where's the next confirmation going to be? And keep that on a regular basis updated. This way you always will be able to act on whatever it is that you are looking to put your money into. And I want you to also think about 2014 with this is a little bit more of a concept discussion of leaning forward, but stepping back. Kind of leaning in, as they say. Leaning in to look at the information, be in front of it, make your own decisions, make your own observations and conclusions from the information that you're getting, but at the same time, step back a little bit, and then take a look at the landscape and what it all means. So when you see the employment number come out, look at it, take a look at what it means internally, step back, compare it to some of the employment, not only of the recent time, but also in the context of the bigger picture. What does this mean? And I say that with almost every single sector or economic number, or maybe even the earnings report when it comes out, or your portfolio. Look at it closely, but then step back and look at it from a different angle so that you can understand better what's going on. If you always keep things too close, you're not going to have any ability to have any peripheral vision that really extends any distance at all. So there's a good list of things that I think you could start with for 2014 in order to make sure that you are the best investor that you can be. And that's what it's all about. You're not going to make it every single year, every single day, every single decade. But there are times that you have to regroup, refocus, regenerate, and that's what the holidays are all about, and then come back fresh with a commitment. Now, with that, I'll mention Trigger Point Research, by the way. These are where you have alerts already baked in for you, where you get alerts through text messages or you get them through email when it is alerted immediately. And we have recently closed a few positions that were profitable. Some of the long positions actually didn't work out very well, but we cut the losses. We had very defined stop levels on them. And, this has been a way for our subscribers to get solid, fundamental, and technical alerts that have a high level of confidence in terms of the ability to move. And hopefully you've checked it out. If you haven't, here's another one for you for 2014. Get a 14-day free trial to Trigger Point Research. Just go to triggerpointresearch.com/free trial, and you will have 14 days of the pro package. So any of the alerts that move and are triggered in that period, you'll get. Also, you can just easily go to the site and sign up for the newsletter where we send out a lot of the setups, the things that are kind of coming into their own where they're looking like they may have the opportunity to be a breaking up or breaking down or a bounce candidate, but they're not there yet. And we do an analysis on that regularly, and you'll get that in your email, whether you're a subscriber or not, by the way. So you can just go over to the site and sign up for that. All right, moving along here. We have a lot more to talk about here. What's going on with Twitter? Did you see that move last week? Twitter was just bought, it seems, by every investor out there last week. I don't know whether it hit the line of in the 40s where everybody was getting excited about the price that it should be bought at, or whether it broke out over the IPO price, which is always something to look for. But we all know that Twitter really has some very significant power to hopefully make some money over time, but yet at the same time, it still remains an unproven enterprise. And I'm pretty surprised that Twitter actually moved as much as it did, although many of the social media stocks did also move. And it, again, as I mentioned earlier, it may be just simply a movement of the the stocks for window dressing at this time of year. But I would tell you something. It looks like Twitter's a little bit overdone here from a fundamental standpoint. It could move up. It could do crazy things. We've seen other stocks do that. But I just thought that it was really interesting. They came out with a few different announcements last week of some things about privacy and about some new functionality. But still, at the end of the day, you know, the franchise itself, I don't see where the total value is of that. Nonetheless, one of the things that we saw was that stocks broke down again last week. It's 2 weeks now. Nothing major. About a 1.5%, 2% move on markets from the high. So it's nothing to really be terribly concerned about in terms of, you know, this big disaster. But at the same time, if there is some kind of a movement towards looking at fundamentals and cleaning up the books and making sure that there's going to be ample opportunity to save your profits and keep your profits, it's a very interesting spot that we're in, and probably it's going to culminate with a move early this week or mid this week when we see the FOMC. I'm for one, am really excited about them getting out of the markets. But you know what? When they do, in fact, start to taper, here's the thing. When they do start to move in a direction, whatever that direction is, you know, they always say, don't fight the Fed. But when they move in a direction, the idea is going to be implanted in investors' minds. And now with the Volcker Rule, even though that did come out and it was approved and it was a little less onerous than first imagined in terms of the proprietary trading for companies, for banks, the fact still remains that any kind of move to reduce liquidity in the markets of any sort will hurt, because there is a tremendous amount of the high-frequency trading and, of course, the proprietary trading that goes on that is at stake here. So when you look at that, and you look at the idea that once a move by the Fed in a directional manner does begin, and you start getting that in the minds of people, you may see a change in the sentiment for equities. You know, what's the fair value? What's the level? I mean, you know, we did come down on the S&P 500 down to a support level. We broke down through it, tried a couple times to bounce in the last week or so, and really been unsuccessful. It still is, you know, we're still not in this big sentiment change, although I will tell you that there was a reading on sentiment, I guess it was last week, by the sentiment of bullish versus bearish investors, and it was extraordinarily high. So high, as a matter of fact, that the publisher of this particular index used the word horrifying at the level that they were seeing, because it hasn't been seen but a few times over history. And each and every time that this was seen, there was at least a 5% or so correction that followed. And remember, let's put this in the context that there hasn't been a correction of more than, 2%? Maybe? And that lasted only a few days over the last 6, 7, 8 months. So a 5% correction, even from this level, is really not the worst thing in the world. As a matter of fact, I would welcome it only because there is some incredibly ridiculous valuations, and investors are getting ahead of themselves, and we need to put things back in order. This is a natural process. This is a natural condition that we have not seen. That's where the problems have been. You start moving stocks up and just move them up because you're moving them up. That's not a good enough reason. That is not good business. And sure, we're seeing a lot of buybacks and increases in dividends and, you know, those kinds of maneuvers that companies are doing, and we're seeing a push into equities in the U.S. because it's one of the safer places that is seen around the world. You're also seeing that the dollar has been broken down a bit. The yen is at a very, very low level. It really sparked a incredible sell-off of the last 5 or 6 weeks here. So what we're seeing right now is some of that maneuvering going on, and we've also seen it in the commodities arena. You know, we've seen that gold really took a big hit this year. We talked about this last week, so that silver as well and many of the other related, although oil did have a decent move. Now, I did suggest to you about a week ago or so that gold was an interesting play. We saw that the short side of the equation was very heavy. In the commitment of traders report that came out, the short sellers of gold were far outpacing any of the longs, and the short interest or the positions that were on the short side were very high. We entered a position of gold and actually worked the miners over last week very successfully. And hopefully you will take a look at that because it could be one of the greatest rotation trades that we see if, in fact, gold does hold in this 1230 or even more than 1250. If it can hold, the miners have a very good chance of seeing a turnaround here. Now, one of the things that we did talk about back when we talked with Frank Curzio about this was one of the things you'll see is if gold prices stay down, many of the miners will, in fact, start slowing their production. And again, supply and demand, that turns the whole cycle around. Now, that also is going to provide a lot of problems for companies in that sector. But what you can look at is, for example, if you want to look at the gold miners, it's a symbol GDX, or the junior gold miners. They trade much more aggressively, is a GDXJ. And this is something that's not for the faint of heart, but to take a look at some of these stocks, they've been basing out, and if you do buy it through an ETF, and you're thinking about a little bit of a longer-term hold, then there may be some really good opportunity here. Now, if you go stock by stock, that could be a problem because you don't know really who has what cost for their process right now, unless you do some digging, of course, and do your research. But at least you can have a little taste and start adding on to it if, in fact, we can hold here. Now, if we break 1,200, which is it's very possible if we see a massive amount of tapering and we do see some increase in interest rates. We're talking about India right now. Is there some consideration about increasing rates? And that could be a problem. And, of course, we have the commotion of the yen that adds to all of this. So just take a look at this, and I want you to consider this as something that could be an interesting rotation. And if you look at let's look at the year-by-year, the calendar year rotation that takes place. Oftentimes, you will see the stocks that are leading, maybe lead for 1 or 2 years, the sectors, whether it's a small cap, large cap, the international, whether it's commodities or any component of the commodities, or whatever you look at, bonds versus international versus domestic. You'll take a look at that kind of table, and you'll see that there is oftentimes a rotation that goes on year by year. Something is terribly just put it to the side. It's sold out, and nobody wants it, and then all of a sudden it snaps back, whether it's exactly in a calendar year or in a period. Remember, there is this rotation that goes on. We saw it with the banks. Remember, nobody wanted the banks. Now everybody wants the banks. Nobody wanted Facebook. Now everybody wants Facebook. This is the process of investing. It's all cyclical. The question is, when do you buy? There's two parts of that. There's two answers to that that could be broken down to two parts, right? When do you buy? Well, it depends on what you're looking to do and what your risk tolerance is and what your overall objective and goals are. Let's say you're investing just for a retirement plan, your IRA, something you're going to have for a long time. It's going to be a long-term hold. Well, that's one kind of investing that maybe you want to buy something to hold it for a while that you're not going to be moving in and out of. Then you have maybe your short-term portfolio where you're going to be aggressively trading. Then you have a different portfolio that may have maybe some mutual funds as a bedrock to your overall strategy that is based on an asset allocation. There's all different types of things that have to fit together to make a total portfolio. Not one particular strategy will be the end-all strategy because there is a constant rotation and cycles that go on. Once you believe that it is the absolute end to any particular sector, and when the masses say that, and when once you believe that, man, this is never going to stop going up, it's, I got to get on board, and the masses believe that, it's usually the wrong time. It usually is opposite of that. So consider the contrarian side of the arguments when you're investing. Because there is the cycle, and it's proven from time and time over that things will cycle around. And you'll see that just by looking at charts. That's what's so great about charts. Very difficult to really understand in advance the fundamentals, but when you look at charts, you can see what's going on. Take a long-term view. Take a look at if you haven't done so, take a look at a weekly chart of the S&P or even a monthly chart of the S&P. It tells an entirely different story than the daily or the 60-minute or the 30-minute or the 10-minute, whatever you're looking at. It tells a totally different story. One of the things that we did talk about was China recently, about some of their data and whether it's believable or not, and some of the things they're doing to spark some growth over there. One of the things that if you remember, they're changing their one-child policy. And I began thinking about that, and I remembered that there's an interesting stock out there that we may want to look at. Now, the thing is that if you think about it, if the one-child policy has changed ever so slightly and there is more of children being born in China, even by a small amount, where do we see some potential benefit? Well, there's a company called Mindray Medical, and what they do is they develop and manufacture and market all sorts of medical devices, but they also have patient monitoring devices and lab instruments and ultrasound imaging systems. So if you're thinking about where can I see some benefit, well, here you go. More children, more ultrasounds, more need for the various products and diagnostic tools that are involved with anything pre- and post-pregnancy. Now, this company has, it has a market cap of about $4.5 billion. About 87 million shares are out. There's a pretty large overall short interest on this, 16 days to cover. And if, in fact, this stock gets any kind of juice going, it could be very interesting. Now, obviously, you will see that this stock will move with the markets in China, and markets in China just sold off pretty well, and the stock took a hit pretty good as well. It was up about 4.5% on Friday, though. The stock has been in a range of about, 35 to about, I probably would say about 42 for some time. It's been there all since, early this year in March, in February. And when you're looking at the overall fundamentals, you're seeing some good things here. You have a five-year growth rate that looks good. You have a decent, dividend on here, which is interesting to look at. The estimated PEG ratio is 1.36, and it is an aggressive move. It has about it's a good company, 7,500 employees. It's been around. It's done its thing. It could be an interesting play if, in fact, it can hold its price here and if it starts to move up, because there is a pretty good level of, a lack of any kind of level of significant resistance up to about in the 40s. Now, if this whole idea catches on that there is a need for further diagnostic and monitoring devices that will be used in China, if this all plays out like it's supposed to, I just think this could be something interesting to look at. It has a decent amount of volume and a decent amount of overall interest. The symbol is MR. We haven't invested in it yet. We're still looking at a few things on this, but it's something that is definitely, I think, interesting from a fundamental standpoint and from a thesis, from an understanding of what it is that they do and how that may play out. Whether or not the technicals will work and whether or not the actual stock will play out is yet to be seen, but I can see this doing well. It just makes one of those things that just makes a lot of sense, right? It just kind of makes good sense. So anyway, that I think is interesting. The other thing is we did put out a potential breaking up and breaking down on Trigger Point Research last week, and there was a couple things in there that I thought were interesting. There's some names that I was looking at. you know, it's interesting because with the recent moves that we've seen and the lack of any kind of major breakdown, the support levels are pretty strong when it comes to individual stocks. You know, many of the stocks trade along with the markets, and the support levels have been pretty solid. So what we're seeing is a time here where if a stock can hold its support right now, when you're seeing a pretty good density of support, you know, you need to kind of think about, okay, well, what am I going to do here? And it's more of a buying opportunity right now until things turn. But I will tell you, on the other side is, if they do break down from their support, now all of a sudden you have a significant resistance level that is really thick. So kind of the knife cuts both ways. Right now, we're still seeing stocks holding very well. For example, I looked at KSU, transportation. I looked at GPS. We did short the gap. That looked really good. There was other ones also, for example, like on the long side, you got to look at NSM, which is a mortgage company. Now, this all depends on, of course, what's happening with mortgage rates and how many people refinance and buy homes, et cetera. But here's a stock that has some good-looking fundamentals and also a decent-looking chart. But, you know, I got to tell you something. If it can clear this, I don't know, 42.5-ish range very convincingly, man, that could be a really good play that moves forward. Look at ATI above 34.5, Polycom above 1170. The longest consolidations that I have seen in a long time is Polycom, PLCM, above about 1175 or so is probably a good level for that to take a look at. I would be also very concerned about some of the oils and some of the refiners and some of the companies that are involved in the energy sector. WPX is one of them. That is something that I think you should take a look at, and it's going to be bouncing around pretty well, but if oil comes down and we see some gas prices come down and, you know, the whole energy sector slow a little bit, but, you know, we'll see what happens with some of these storms that are going on and with the consumption of either natural gas or heating oil, et cetera. And then also WTI, I mentioned that some time ago. That's a pretty good looking chart from a short side. The housing market still looks pretty good. We thought that KBH looked interesting recently. And that's just something that I think that you should also take a look at. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be having some great guests on, by the way. We're going to have Frank Curzio back. We're going to have Das on. Please send me your recommendations, suggestions for who should be on the show. Send to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And we will do our best to get them on. We're trying to get on some of the people that you really like for the end of the year. Well, we did schedule that, but also we're trying to always mix it up and bring on people, because I got to tell you something. Sometimes the guests that I'm not quite sure how that's going to work and whether we're going to get a good reaction and people are going to enjoy what we talk about. I got to tell you, I get sometimes some great reviews. So I try to bring on as many people with as many different viewpoints that we can, because it kind of makes sense and to do that, because we learn as we go. So I think that's really important. Other than that, we're going to end it on a short note this week, because it is getting to the holiday time and it's time to spend in front of the fireplace if you're up north. And I'm going to spend some time with the family. So I want to thank you for joining me. Make sure to check out all the things we talk about. And of course, over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, you can get your free newsletter over on triggerpointresearch.com. If you use TradeStation, need to check out the indicators. A new one's coming out. The T-score is going to be coming out within a couple of weeks. This is really a neat indicator with a strategy that you're going to be able to use. And I, you know, thanks so much. That's over on triggercharts.com. And I'll see you next week. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing. We'll be right back.